A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, 1st Chapter, verses 1 to 13. Verse 1. Shri Raja Vacha Sayang Vasye Haguro Vangshayam Vistara Chuta Yatya Vishra Shisham Sarga Manon Anyan Padasana. King Pariksit said, O my Lord, my spiritual master, now I have fully heard from your grace about the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu, but there are also other Manus, and I want to hear about their dynasties. Kindly describe them to us. So, what do you remember from the 7th canto? A long time ago. Anything from the whole 7th canto? Or from the 7th canto? Oh no, don't talk about the exam. Some people haven't taken it. Okay, Jai Nitai.
Whatever, just think of Krishna.
Just think of Krishna, somehow or other, think of Krishna. Very good. Lesson of 7th canto. What did you learn, Madhavendra Puri? Right. So he asked, what about us, who are not like Prahlad Maharaj?
Yes. And then, two sections.
Two sections, you learned that. Janamashtami, what did you learn? Sarvatam. So you have surrendered to your fate. Okay. Yes, Adi Purush.
We met different grades of devotees.
Different grades of devotees are there.
It was just a perfect devotee like Prabhupada, right. And there was the best of the best, Yudhishthira.
Oh. Haribo, did you bring a garland for Prabhupada? Would you like to offer it? Thank you. Welcome. Parvati.
Oh, welcome to you. Thank you very much. Wonderful to see you.
It's good to see you. Okay. Anybody else? Prashanta, what did you learn from 7th? Did you tell me something already?
No,
from
what?
Still.
They should have some of the...
We have to.
In the mode of goodness.
Yes, in the mode of goodness.
And so satisfied.
Self-satisfied. Yes, at least being satisfied. If you're not self-satisfied, just be satisfied with what Krishna gives you.
And
Grihastha is Gandha Kupam as well for many reasons, because you may forget Krishna on the way. Yes, there are Grihastha Brahmacharis. We heard about them. They go to Vrindavan. Very good. Right, Brahmanas, Brahmana Grihastas become saints. Yes, so many kinds of Brahmins. Yes. Yes, Krishna came at the end of 7th canto somehow or other.
And higher than
devotees. Yes. Right, so the highest is the pure devotees. Krishna worships the pure devotees, so they're the highest. Okay, so now we'll start with 8th canto. I would like to start by reading the summary, part of the summary of the 8th canto written by Srila Prabhupada, the first two paragraphs. First of all, let me offer my humble, respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Shri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. Sometime in the year 1935, when His Divine Grace was staying at Radha Kund, I went to see him from Bombay. At that time, he gave me many important instructions in regard to constructing temples and publishing books. He personally told me that publishing books is more important than constructing temples. Of course, those same instructions remained within my mind for many years. In 1944, I began publishing my Back to Godhead, and when I retired from family life in 1958, I began publishing Srimad Bhagavatam in Delhi. When three parts of Srimad Bhagavatam had been published in India, I then started for the United States of America on the 13th of August, 1965. I am continuously trying to publish books as suggested by my spiritual master. Now in this year, 1976, I have completed the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and a summary of the 10th canto has already been published as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, the 8th canto, 9th canto, 10th canto, 11th canto, and 12th canto are yet to be published. On this occasion, therefore, I am praying to my spiritual master to give me strength to finish this work. I am neither a great scholar nor a great devotee. I am simply a humble servant of my spiritual master, and to the best of my ability I am trying to please him by publishing these books with the cooperation of my disciples in America. Fortunately, scholars all over the world are appreciating these publications. Let us cooperatively publish more and more volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam just to please His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So here we have a historical idea here of the eighth canto. He was starting it in 1976. He had finished all of the other first seven cantos. 1976, and between 1976 and 77, he did eighth canto, ninth canto, and the first 13 chapters of tenth canto. So within 1 year, he did two cantos plus 13 chapters of tenth canto. And he was in the last 6 months of 1977, he was completely ill. He was like on his deathbed for 6 months, practically speaking, not eating and barely drinking. And in that condition, Srila Prabhupada wrote these books. So we can really appreciate now what we're getting here. We're getting the last books that Srila Prabhupada wrote before he left this planet, Canto 8. And tomorrow we'll hear some of the experiences that Prabhupada was having with his disciples in 1976, especially one particular sannyasi. And it will be in the purport of Gajendra tomorrow. We'll hear about it, all about it. And we'll hear from that sannyasi himself, how he visited Srila Prabhupada after he became grihastha, and how Prabhupada treated him, how Prabhupada was so merciful. So that's all a part of what's going on here in the eighth canto. Not only is the pastimes are going on, but Srila Prabhupada's pastimes are also going on at the same time that this canto is going on. And this canto is going to be cosmic pastimes. We're moving up to the heavenly planets now and to Bhumandala, to some parts of the universe which are unseen by most human beings. And few yogis may go there, but most human beings do not have access to these parts of the universe. So now we're going to see exactly what it is like. We'll hear descriptions, very detailed descriptions of what these places are like, and what their people are like, and what they do there. Actually, they do the same thing there they do here. They fight. They have a lot of fights, have wars, and people, even heavenly planets are not stable. Indra loses his kingdom, and they have this pastime churning the ocean of milk. So what is the connection between 7th canto and 8th canto? Actually, the cantos 3 through 7 were describing Swayambhu Vamanu and his descendants. So many, many cantos. So now from 8th canto, we're going to hear about the other Manus, the rest of the 14 Manus. There's 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. So already 6 are finished. We're in the 7th. And there are 7 more to go. So we'll hear about all these different Manus in this canto. And when you get your flip chart for chapter 13, I think it is. I have a timeline there of where the Manus come in the chapters. So when you get your flip charts, you gave them chapter 1 today? Okay. So you'll be getting these charts as we go on. So in this first chapter, we'll hear about 4 Manus. Of course, Swayambhuva we've already heard. And we'll hear about the next 3 Manus. So some of the themes I found for 8th canto, of course, the first one is Manvantara, the Manus. That's obvious. And then I've also found mukti. There's Gajendra Mokshana. And I found bhakti, of course. And there's 9 processes of devotional service. So which process of devotional service will we hear about, especially in Canto 8? Yes?
Vandanam.
Vandanam? Yes, of course, Vandanam. Practically all our classes will be Vandanam. But there's another one, yes? Atmanivedanam, Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj will surrender everything to Vamanadev. So we're going to surrender everything in this canto, preparing to hear 10th canto next year. Everything is in preparation for hearing Krishna Lila. All of these pastimes are just so we can be prepared to hear about Krishna in Vrindavan next year. So Poshanam, Ishanukatha, these are also touched on in this canto. So now, Pariksha Maharaj said, I've already heard everything about Swayambhuva Manu, and I want to hear now about the other Manus. So verse 2, O learned Brahman, Shukadev Goswami, The great learned persons who are completely intelligent describe the activities and appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead during the various manvantaras. We are very eager to hear about these narrations. Kindly describe them. So in the middle of the purport, Prabhupada says, the present time, especially in India, so many rascals are claiming to be incarnations and people are being misled. So there are, even in Prabhupada's time, and now it's increased. Since Prabhupada's left, there's many more incarnations have appeared in India. So many more. Therefore, the identity of an incarnation should be confirmed by the descriptions of the Shastras and by wonderful activities. As described in this verse by the word Mahiyasa, the activities of an incarnation are not ordinary magic or jugglery, but are wonderful activities. So we should be prepared to hear very extraordinary activities in this canto. When Srila Prabhupada was here, there was one incarnation, of course he's still here now, the same incarnation who likes to manufacture gold, rasgullas, different things. So one time he was challenged by the most famous magician on this earth. I think his name is Sarkar. Sarkar, he was challenged, but he refused to accept the challenge. The magician said, I can do anything you can do, and even better. But actually, he didn't answer the challenge. He wanted to challenge him and show him, I can do much better than you. And I can do whatever you're doing. So, but I'm not claiming to be God. And I think he might have met Srila Prabhupada, this magician. He was a very famous magician during Prabhupada's time. I don't know if he's still here, still living, but he was very famous. Yes?
His name is P.C. Sarkar.
P.C. Sarkar, yes. P.C. Sarkar.
Sarkar?
Sarkar. Sarkar. A world famous magician. As I think he's Indian, yes? Yeah, Bengali also, yes. Okay. Yes, we heard, I think in a previous canto, Prabhupada was saying that all the Bengalis, they are coming and cheating everyone, but another Bengali will come and cut them down. I will be the axe in the forest, the axe that will cut down the forest. This Prabhupada said that. So verse 3, O learned Brahman, kindly describe to us whatever activities the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created this cosmic manifestation, has performed in the past manvantaras, is performing at present, and will perform in the future manvantaras, past, present, and future. So in the purport sentence number 2, it says, past, present, and future always exist, both for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for ordinary living entities. So what does this mean? Past, present, and future always exist, both for the Supreme. I thought, you know, there's the Supreme Lord is beyond that. How does it exist for him? Jamashmi. Okay, he's the controller, so. Yeah, for us it definitely exists. Yes, that's the point. Prabhupada's making the point. Because they're eternal, everyone's eternal. So we all had a past and we all will have a future. It's not that at the end of this body, everything is finished. And this is the point. Adi Purush, did you have some point? Okay. So in Bhagavad Gita, there is a verse which shows a difference between past, present, and future for Krishna and past, present, and future for everyone else. Does anybody know? And it's in relationship to Arjuna. Yes, Janmashtami.
I don't know the verse, but it's purification.
Yeah.
Many.
Yes. Many births.
You and I have passed. You can't remember, but I can remember.
I can remember all of them. So Arjuna was there when Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god. He said, in the beginning I spoke this to Vivasvan. Arjuna was there. But Arjuna couldn't remember, because otherwise he wouldn't have asked the question about, well, how is it possible for you to speak Gita to sun god, because he's so much older than you. You're only 100 years old and he's a few million. So how is it that it's possible? Because Krishna never dies. Because Arjuna, he forgot. So even if you're a liberated soul, there's still limitations in your relationship to Krishna. Krishna can remember all his previous incarnations. Of course, he doesn't change his body. Just changes his mood. If he gets angry, he comes as Nrsinga. And if he wants to do other things, he comes as other incarnations. If he wants to swim, he comes as Matsya. He wants to go for a swim. So he doesn't change his body, but he just changes his different mood, his different moods. So verse 4, Shukadeva Goswami said, in the present kalpa, there have already been 6 manus. I have described to you Swayambhuva Manu and the appearance of many demigods. In this kalpa of Brahma, Swayambhuva is the first manu. What's the name of this kalpa of Brahma? Does anybody know? Is it Padma? Is this the Padma kalpa that we're in right now? I think so. I think we're in the Padma kalpa. Padma, lotus millennium. That's the day of Brahma. So 6 manus, we're in the middle of Brahma's life. We're in, right in the middle. He's in the middle aged right now, as some of us are, middle aged, Lord Brahma. Swayambhuva Manu had 2 daughters named Akuti and Devahuti. From their wombs, Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as 2 sons named Yajnamurti and Kapila, respectively. These sons were entrusted with preaching about religion and knowledge. O best of the Kurus, I have already described in the 3rd canto the activities of Kapila, son of Devahuti. Now I shall describe the activities of Yajnapati, son of Akuti. Verse 7, Swayambhuva Manu, husband of Shatarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. Before we go to the purport, I was reading Garga Samhita the other day, and I found something very interesting, which I never heard before, was that Arjuna was Swayambhuva Manu in some previous life. So I thought that was quite interesting. Interesting point. Arjuna is many, many combination of so many characters. Huh? This Manu, yeah. It said that in Garga Samhita. I was just reading it the other day. This Manu, Swayambhuva. No, Swayambhuva. Swayambhuva Manu. No, it can't be Vaivasvata because he's somewhere else. And Arjuna is some. Of course, could be, but these people can expand, but it's not. Vaivasvata is in his own place. So, who are these? Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita, Evam Parampara Praptam. Who are the, and it says that Krishna taught Bhagavad Gita to the Rajarshis. So who are these Rajarshis that Krishna taught Bhagavad Gita to? We know, of course, he taught one. One was Vivashvan. No, Vivashvan taught it to Manu and Manu to Ikshvaku. The Prabhupada explains in the purport, who are these Rajarshis, actually? They're the Manus. Manus are the ones who get Bhagavad Gita and then they make their Manu Samhita and then they teach mankind. So about 3 lines down, Prabhupada says, all the Manus were perfect kings. They were Rajarshis. In other words, although they held post as kings of the world, they were as good as great saints. Swayambhuva Manu, for example, was the emperor of the world, yet he had no desire for sense gratification. This is the meaning of monarchy. The king of the country or the emperor of the empire must be so trained by nature he renounces sense gratification. It is not that because one becomes king he should unnecessarily spend money for sense gratification. As soon as kings became degraded, spending money for sense gratification, that they were lost. So what does it say in Bhagavad Gita about lost? And the yoga nashta parantapa. Yes. Sakali neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. It's the same verse, but Prabhupada is paraphrasing it. So how did this Gita, how did this knowledge become lost by the kings is when they started using their post, their position, for their own sense gratification. So that's part of how this knowledge got lost. Because Gita teaches you, what does Gita teach you if you're a king? Or if you're anybody, actually? How should you work? Without attachment to the fruit. Without attachment to the fruit. So don't be attached to the fruit, one of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So here he started, they become attached to the fruits and they use it for themselves and then they're lost. Similarly, at the present moment, monarchy having been lost, the people have created democracy, which is also failing. Now, by the laws of nature, the time is coming when dictatorship will put the citizens into more and more difficulty. So it goes from monarchy to democracy to dictatorship. It seems, because that's how the material world is. It comes degraded, like the seasons, satya and down to kali. Everything degrades. The time degrades everything. So that's what happens in your body, too. If you don't take care of it when you get old, then it just starts to dissipate and starts to fall apart. So you have to do preventive maintenance. You have to maintain. The same thing, Kali Yuga, now everything is falling apart and the citizens are in difficulty. And so therefore, Krishna has appeared as Srimad Bhagavatam. So I have a few verses here from third canto, 322, 32, up to 35, which I'll read, which describe the life of Swayambhuva Manu, the life and mentality. 322, 32, going up through 35. Having entered the city of Barhishmati, in which he had previously lived, Manu entered his palace, which was filled with an atmosphere that eradicated the three miseries of material existence. So imagine if you go into the palace of the emperor or any person on this planet, I don't think you'll find this atmosphere that eradicates. You'll probably be more miserable when you enter it, especially. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor, and early in the morning every day he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. So first thing you get up, you hear the pastimes of the Lord. That was the standard for emperors in the past. Thus, Swayambhuva Manu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna-conscious atmosphere. Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a Manvantara era, was not spent in vain, since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down, and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. So this is the difference between Swayambhuva Manu and modern politicians. You're not going to hear them chanting the glories of the Lord and writing down and contemplating. They're going to be having all the newspapers on their desk and they're going to have the internet and so many things which they're going to be contemplating. And what are all the other kings and presidents doing all over the world, because they're worried about their position, and what are the people doing? And so this is their contemplation. It's not about Krishna. So another difference between what's another difference between Swayambhuva Manu and modern day kings and presidents? Okay, what he was doing, he was always... Yes, Prashanta.
Now he's entering
the forest. Imagine. The kingdom is, you know, he's still, the palace is there and everybody's there and all his opulence is there and he's leaving it. He's going to go eat roots and fruits and... Can you imagine one extreme to the other? You won't find any of these people doing that. None of them are going to go to the forest. Of course, nowadays nobody goes to the forest, but at least you're supposed to go to Vrindavan. You won't find them coming here and giving up everything and just living a simple life in Vrindavan. Nobody will do that. Prabhupada says, at the present moment, politicians are very eager to take charge of the government. See, this is a purport 5.1.22. And they engage their men in canvassing from door to door to get votes to win the post of president or similar exalted office. But King Priyavrata had to be persuaded by Lord Brahma to accept the post of emperor. And his father felt relieved to give the universe to his son. Now, this is such a difference. If they had the universe, boy, would they be happy. Even if they had the world or even a country, these people would be so happy. Thus it is evident the kings and executive heads of government in the Vedic age never accepted their positions for sense enjoyment. They ruled only to maintain and protect the kingdom for the welfare of the citizens. So this is the difference between previous Vedic society and now. It's quite a big difference. Just, it's so amazing just to have that opulence and be able to give it up and just live in the forest. Just to be able to do that requires such a great character. And we're going to find out what he did in the forest. He didn't have an easy life there either. He was standing on one toe or something, or on one foot for 100 years. I mean, he didn't just sit there and eat his fruits and be happy, you know. Yet he was still doing austerities because he wanted to go back to Godhead. So, verse 8. O scion of Bharata, after Swayambhuva Manu, here it is, had thus entered the forest with his wife, he stood on one leg on the bank of the river Surnanda, and in this way, with only one leg touching the earth, he performed great austerities for 100 years. Just imagine our president or our prime minister or somebody doing, just going off to the forest and standing on one leg. It's impossible. While performing these austerities, he spoke as follows. So while he's doing these austerities, he's reciting beautiful prayers to the Supersoul in the heart. It seems like most of these prayers are about Supersoul. So verse 9, the first verse. Yena chetayate vishvam, vishvam chetayate nayam, yojagatishayane smin nayam tam veda veda saha. Lord Manu said, the Supreme Living Being has created this material world of animation. It is not that he was created by this material world. When everything is silent, the Supreme Being stays awake as a witness. The living entity does not know him, but he knows everything. So he's going to talk about the qualities of the Lord. The first quality is that he's the creator. And the second quality is that he's not created. He's the creator, but he's not one of the creations. He is the creator. So this is the first thing. So what does this remind you of? A verse, or any verses somewhere? There's one verse especially this reminds me of, that when he stays awake as a witness, he's always there. He has created. Any verses come to your mind? Chatushloki, yes. Yes, the first verse. Again, the Lord is, he's always there, beginning, middle, and end. It's only he. And we should try and find him. That's the last verse. So here, in the middle of the purport, Prabhupada says, it makes an interesting point. When the material world is awake and put in working order, this is a kind of dream. So we're all dreaming again. All of us are dreaming. We're having our dream. Very nice dream. When the living entities go to sleep, they dream again. So different kinds of dreams. Daydream and night dream. And when unconscious at the time of annihilation, when this material world is unmanifested, they enter another stage of dreaming. At any stage in the material world, therefore they are all dreaming. In the spiritual world, however, everything is awake. So one thing I was trying to remember, we heard something about, oh yes, I think it was in seventh at the end of seventh canto, that the in the dreaming state is when all the rules and regulations of Shastra are supposed to be followed. But the Lord, he doesn't have to follow because he doesn't dream. He's beyond the dreaming. So he doesn't need to follow these rules and regulations. But it's for those who are dreaming. Those who are dreaming, they have to follow the rules of Shastra. So that's all for us. We're all dreaming.
How do you follow the rules of Shastra?
During your daydream. I know. Until I gave the class, I was always thinking, you know, when I was studying this that verse, I was thinking, oh, how is it possible at nighttime you're going to follow the rules of Shastra? And then when I gave the class, I said, oh, yeah, it's daydream. It's during our daydream, then we follow the rules of Shastra. It's for those who are dreaming in this dream world. In this dream world. Yes. And there's a dream world within the dream world, and that's Hollywood in America, where they make all the films. I was reading a Back to Godhead article, and one boy, I think it's Nishingananda's son, was going to school to learn how to make films. And the first day of school, they said, welcome to the place of illusion. Because it's actually, the dreams are all illusions that people, I mean, the movies, they're all illusions that my son calls it an instant dream. When he watches the movies, it's an instant dream. You just go and you dream on. Stay in your dream world. But that's not life. unfortunately. We have to wake up from our dream. And there's a verse, 11th canto, 22nd chapter, verse 40. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. What is called birth is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts a new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. So we accept this body. Why do we accept it? Well, of course, we're forced to accept it. I have that experience when I had that near-death experience. When I came back and I thought I had left my body. Of course, I didn't, or else I wouldn't have been here. And so, but I was looking at my body and I was thinking, how come I got an old one? I should have got a young one instead of an old one. Same old body. It's like that. You get taken out of your life for an instant. If you just come out apart from it and you just think, you know, how come I got this body? Anyway, it's what we deserve. But it's actually a dream. It's not who we are. It's a case of mistaken identity. Mistaken identity. We're all have amnesia. But this class is to make us wake up to reality. So this is, in the purport of that, 11:22:40 is a nice statement. Our identification with our own body and our blind acceptance of bodily relationships as permanent constitute a prolonged form of dreaming or fantasy in which one imagines oneself to be separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're having a big dream, long dream now, very long, whole life. And we're trying to wake up as devotees. So, and there's the next verse after that. Just as a person experiencing a dream or daydream does not remember his previous dreams or daydreams, a person situated in his present body, although having existed prior to it, thinks he has only recently come into being. Don't remember our past lives. Some people may, but very few. Don't remember. But there is a verse somewhere, which I don't remember right now, but I think it was in the end of the seventh canto, all that heavy philosophical part, that you can tell what your past life was, but by how you are in this life. Because it's the fruit. This body is the fruit of what you did in your past lives. So we can understand what was our past life by how our mind is now. If it's disturbed or if it's peaceful or whatever, you can understand what your past life was. So as devotees, we're trying to go beyond our conditioning. And that's why we chant Hare Krishna and we go to Bhagavatam class. To go beyond our conditioning. Get beyond it. Go to the soul. Go to the essence. So there's one more verse about dreams which I really like. And that is from 4th canto, 29th chapter, verse 2b. So the end of the 4th canto is extra verse. Everything happening within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literatures. Isn't that interesting? Past, present, and future, it's all a dream. The actual reality, well, what is the reality then? Okay, if this is all a dream, then what's reality? When are we awake? Are we ever awake? Or are we always sleeping? Krishna consciousness, yes.
Spiritual
world. I mean, but...
Spiritual body.
What about here and now? I mean, of course, when we get our sarup, that's in the future, in the spiritual world. What about now? Are we ever awake? Adi Purush.
Consciousness itself.
Consciousness, okay. Consciousness is our awakeness. Hopefully, if it's in the right place. But if it's not in the right place, we may be still sleeping. Yes?
We are completely awake when we are sincerely performing devotional service.
Yes, we're awake when we're thinking of Krishna, we're trying to please Krishna. Then we're awake. And our consciousness, when it's absorbed in ourself, in our body, in our mind, in our crazy mind, and all these things, then it's asleep. It's still sleeping. So we want to wake up. Wake up to Krishna. Prabhupada tells us what reality is in 4:29:2b purport. The actual reality is Krishna and service to Krishna. Well, that's reality. So the purpose of Bhagavatam is to separate reality from illusion. That's what we have to do. So hopefully, by the end of 9 cantos, you will know what is reality and you'll be ready for the reality when it comes. Krishna is a small cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Wonderful reality, actually. And the other part of the reality is that we're his servant. We just don't know yet which service. Of course, we know what service. In this life, we have service for him. So that's our practice. That's our service for Krishna. So verse 10. Now, Sayambhuva Manu is talking about the Creator. When he's silent, he's awake. When everything is silent, he's still awake. Oh, and I was reading another commentary about Yashoda. When she was sleeping, she wasn't really sleeping. She was in prema. The devotees in the spiritual world, they don't sleep as we do in ignorance. They're awake. Even when they sleep, they're in prema. They're in love of Krishna. That was interesting. So verse 10. Something to look forward to. Atmavasyamidam vishvam yakinche jagatam yam jagatena tatena bhunshita magviraha kashasiddhanam. Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his super soul feature is present everywhere, wherever there are animate or inanimate beings. Therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. So an extension, when we extend our dream, then we have so many relatives, we have so many things that we think are ours. So that's just an extension of our dream. And when Krishna takes them away, then we suffer if we're attached to them. But if we give them to Krishna before he takes them away, that's a better thing to do. You're going to lose it anyway. Whatever you have, you're going to lose. So better just give it to Krishna. Try to please Krishna and be happy in this life. It's paragraph 1, beginning of the purport. Having described the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as transcendental, so that's the first lesson, the Lord is transcendental. Second lesson, Sayambhuva Manu for the instruction of the sons and grandsons in his dynasty is now describing all the property of the universe as belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manu's instructions are not only for his own sons and grandsons, but for all of human society. The word man, or in Sanskrit, manusha, has been derived from the name Manu, for all the members of human society are descendants of the original Manu. So how does that make you feel? We're all descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, or maybe Vaivasvata Manu. We were in a different Manu now. We're all descendants of Manu, and that's why we're called man. Or woman. We're all descendants of Manu. And these instructions are for us. He is our great-great-great-great-grandfather. And he's giving us instructions. First one, Lord is transcendental. Second one, everything belongs to him. He's everywhere, so everything is him. Therefore, don't take anything which is not your quota. Now we'll go to paragraph 4 of the purport. One should learn from the Vedic literature that one's body is also not the property of the individual soul, but is given to the individual soul according to his karma. Well, you thought you had something. At least the body is mine, right? No, wrong. The body is not yours, and your mind is not yours either. The mind also belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. So the sooner you give it to him, the happier you'll be. Karmana daivanetrena jantude hopapataye. 8,400,000 different bodily forms are machines given to the individual soul. So the body is a machine. What is also in Bhagavad Gita, a verse about this machine? Ishara sarabhutanam hridesha arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarabhutani yantra-arutani. Yantra is a yantra, a machine. And so we have to take care of the machine, but it's not ours because we can't keep it, right? It's going to be taken away from us at the time of death. And even now, it's when you get old, old age means it's gradually taken away, taken away, taken away. First something goes, another thing goes, your sight goes, your hearing goes. Different things, slowly, slowly. Either all at once, and then all at once, and then everything is gone. And so that's the way it is. Because if it were ours, then we could keep it. But it's not ours. So we'll go to paragraph 6 in the purport. Since all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything should be offered to the Lord, and we should take only prasad, tena chaktena bhunjita. We should not fight among ourselves to take more than we need. As Narada said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, Yavad priyeta jataran tavat sutam hijayinam adikam yopiman yata sustaino dandamarhati. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished with the laws of nature. And Srila Prabhupada, he was very strict about devotees collecting money. He said, if you take even one paisa of that and use it for yourself, then you have to suffer. So this is at the end of the purport. Prabhupada says, no devotee should claim that any money or property belongs to him. If one thinks that any portion of property of this huge universe belongs to anyone, he is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. No one can surpass the vigilance of material nature or hide his intentions from material nature. So you may... Oh yeah, there's a story. One guru, he sent all his disciples out with a fruit. And he says, now I want you all to go and eat this fruit and in some place where nobody will see you. So all of them came back except one disciple, and he wasn't coming until late, late, late. And finally, he came back and he still had the fruit. And he said, well, you... What happened? He said, well, you know, there's no place where nobody can see. I can see me. I can see myself. And there's also the sun, the moon. And he gave all the witnesses. And so actually, you can't get away with it. You can't get away with stealing from Krishna. You can steal from somebody in this world, but even then you won't get away from it because Krishna sees. He sees everything. So... Here it says, no one can hide your intentions from material nature. Even not only Krishna, you can't even hide it from Durga Devi. You can't hide it from material nature. She sees. If human society unlawfully claims the property of the universe, either partially or wholly, belongs to mankind, all of human society will be cursed as a society of thieves and will be punished by the laws of nature. So Prabhupada is very heavy here about all the countries of the world, that they're going to be cursed if they think it's theirs. So this is the position of Super Soul. He is everywhere. Don't be greedy. Take what is allotted to you. And when Prabhupada was naming deities, he would also name them in London, Radha, London, Ishwara. He is the proprietor of London. He is the controller, or Paris, Ishwara. Paris, Ishwara. London, Ishwara. And he wrote a letter to one devotee, this year, 1976. He says, the deities in London are named Radha, London, Ishwara. Krishna is the proprietor everywhere, but especially London. Why especially London? I think I know, because before the British were in control of India. So now Krishna is in control of London. Yeah, especially London. So if we accept this principle of Ishavasham, how will we behave towards others? We won't infringe on their property. Okay, that's one thing we won't do. What will we? Yes.
We won't fight them.
We won't fight. We won't get in any fights. Aripush.
We
respect them. Okay, we're getting on a more positive note here. We got negatives and positives. Yes. Yes, equal. We'll accept. Yes. There is a nice verse in the 7th canto, 7:14:9, which expresses this principle. Mrigoshtakara makaku sarisrikaga makshika atmana putavat pashe taire shamantaram kiyat. One should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes, birds, and flies exactly like one's own sons. However, how little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals. So, you can only understand this verse if you live in India. I mean, if you read this verse in the West, you can't relate. Camels? And monkeys? In Vrindavan, you can really relate. The monkeys is your own son, but you have to be careful. Prabhupada said, don't be too friendly to the monkey. Yesterday, I had an experience with a monkey. I was outside reading Bhagavatam in front of my door, and we were peacefully coexisting. He was eating some prasad I threw out, and then I was sitting over there, but But I wasn't trusting him, and of course, not for long. And then he decided he wanted to come in my house because the door was open. So I told him, no, I don't want you. He said, come on, don't come in my house now. And then he obeyed me, and then he found a scrap of food right by the door. So then he just took it and went away. But anyway, yeah, you have to be. Only monkeys, mice. We get mice, we get rats sometimes, especially in the winter. It's very cold out, and we see them trying to come in the door. And they succeed too, and we get them out. Snakes. Yes, we had a snake also this summer. Actually, this year, one snake was living near our house, and three times he was across our front door, just going across like this. Snake. Snakes, flies. I just heard a commentary about a fly. I forgot who commented. One of the commentators said that flies get angry. And they, you know what? How they get angry? They get angry at the fire. When we have a candle burning, flies get angry, and they go to the fire and get angry with it, and then they're finished. So this is compared to the demons that were fighting with Krishna. They were getting angry with Krishna, and they're going to Krishna, and they finished. Like, just like flies going into the fire. Now, this is interesting. I never knew that flies got angry. But I guess you can in Vrindavan, when they start buzzing around you and they want to get in your nose or your mouth and you won't let them, and I guess they do get angry. But anyway, they're just like your son, according to the seventh canto. So there was one time devotees, they were taking care of Tulsi, and there is bugs eating Tulsi, and they asked Prabhupada, what should we do about these bugs? And Prabhupada said, let them eat. And Krishna is providing for everyone. So yes, now they have all these, what do you call them, pesticides in the fields. So very difficult to get organic produce. And Prabhupada said, no, they should be allowed to eat because it's being provided by the Lord. So Prabhupada talked about this idea, Ishavasya idea. He wrote a letter to Harikesh in 1976 because Harikesh was preaching in the Eastern European countries. He said, I'm very pleased to learn of our success in Yugoslavia. That you are from that Slovenia? Slovenia? Huh? It was Yugoslavia before, yeah? This was in 1976. What year did you meet the devotees?
I met in Switzerland.
Oh, in Switzerland, okay, yes. Interesting. Our devotees from Iran, one of them he met in Czechoslovakia. Met the devotees in Czech. Prabhupada says, when there is a little hope of success in these countries, it encourages me 100 times more than in other places. So see how Prabhupada was feeling for the people in Yugoslavia. If they take up this Krishna consciousness, they'll take it very seriously. This is a perfection of communist ideology. Everything belongs to God. No private proprietorship. So those of you who come from the Eastern countries, you can identify with this. Was it still like, were you under that in your childhood? In your childhood, you were under the communist country. So, did you have to learn all that in school? All the communists? So, you have your PhD in communist ideology. Yes. That's very useful for Patri, because now the Maoists are trying to take over the country. And he's preaching to the, they're all students, and he's going to college. Patri's going to college. In Nepal, and he's preaching to the leaders of that movement. And because they try to preach to him first, and he said, I am PhD in this. You can. He said, what do you know? He said, what do you know about this? And we're just starting. Yes. Nobody can defeat him in this. So, it's to act because it's the perfect communism, the Krishna consciousness. If you take it one step higher, then you have Krishna consciousness. Perfect. It's the perfect everything. It's the perfect communism. It's the perfect capitalism. It's the perfect monarchy. It's the perfect whatever. Whatever you're looking for. No private proprietorship. They have gone on the radio, so the Prabhupada says, that means they have purified the whole atmosphere. That is the way to introduce the transcendental sound vibrational act. To utilize this approach, gradually try to convince them this movement is the perfection of communism. Go on singing Krishna Kirtan. That is our program. Yeah, I was also in Bombay And we got all these free Bhagavad Gitas in Russian. So I was in the book stall in Juhu Beach, and all these Russian tour groups would come through, and I would give them this book free. This present, my present for you. So this is, so it has worked. It has worked. Yeah, I remember that. And then I was teaching a Bhakti Shastri class, and there was one devotee from Russia, and he says, yeah, I have one of those books. I got one. Showed me this little Bhagavad Gita in Russian. It was just very small like this. So this is, now we have so many, now we have Russian acharyas. Russian acharyas who are preaching in Russian language. And Prabhupada would be so happy. Verse 11. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly watches the activities of the world, no one sees him. Imagine, somebody's watching you, but you don't see him. You're always being watched by Krishna. However, not only by Krishna, by Yamaraj, by so many, the air, the sun, the moon, the sky, so many witnesses watching you. Everybody's, you're being watched. There's no privacy. However, one should not think because no one sees him, he does not see. For his power to see is never diminished. Therefore, everyone should worship the super soul who always stays with the individual soul as a friend. So we'll go to the end of, near the end of paragraph 1. Because we lack perfect knowledge, we cannot see God. But a little deliberation can help us to see God everywhere. This requires training. So now Prabhupada is going to train us to see God everywhere. Are we ready? We're going to see Krishna everywhere now. There's a purport, actually, in the second canto, second chapter, where he really goes into detail how you can perceive the super soul. Anybody, he says, any man who has a little intelligence can perceive super soul. So here we go. With a little deliberation, even the most degraded person can perceive the presence of God. If we take into account whose property is the vast ocean, whose property is the vast land, how the sky exists, how the numberless millions of stars and planets are set in the sky, who has made this universe, and whose property it is, we should certainly come to the conclusion that there is a proprietor of everything. So that's the deliberation. You think, who has made it? And then you know there is somebody there. When we claim proprietorship over a certain piece of land, whether individually or for our families or nations, we should also consider how we became the proprietors. The land was there before our birth, before we came to the land. How did it become our property? Such deliberation will help us understand there is a supreme proprietor of everything, the supreme personality of Godhead. So how to see Krishna everywhere? I got some verses here from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 8, starting with 268. And this is a conversation of Ramananda Roy with Lord Chaitanya. Ramananda Roy told Lord Chaitanya, at first I saw you appear like a sannyasi, but now I'm seeing you as Shyama Sundar, the cowherd boy. Now I see you like a golden doll, and your entire body appears covered by a golden luster. I see, you're holding a flute to your mouth, and your lotus eyes are moving very restlessly due to various ecstasies. I actually see you in this way, and this is very wonderful. My Lord, please tell me, without duplicity, what is causing this vision? Lord Chaitanya said, Prabhu kahe Krishna tomar gatha prema hoy, prema shabhava e jani ho nishchoy. Lord Chaitanya replied, you have a deep love for Krishna. One who has such deep ecstatic love for the Lord naturally sees things in such a way. Please take this from me to be certain. Mahabhagavata deke stavara jangam tahata vaitara shi krishna swanam. A devotee advanced on the spiritual platform sees everything movable and inert as the Supreme Lord. For him, everything he sees here and there is but a manifestation of Lord Krishna. Stavara jangam deke na deke tara murti saracha hoy nija ishta deva svurti. The Mahabhagavata advanced devotee sees everything mobile and immobile. He does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. So interesting. Must be hard if you're only seeing Krishna. But he does see the forms, but not exactly the way we see the forms. He sees them in a different way. He has a different vision. And that is in relationship to Krishna. When we see the forms, we think, oh, we don't see Krishna. We don't see the relationship. But he sees the relationship. Oh, you're doing that class, aren't you? Hari Purush. Seeing Krishna everywhere. So this is a nice verse. These are some nice verses. So Prabhupada explains that as soon as a devotee sees something, movable or inert, he immediately remembers Krishna. Isn't that amazing? You just see something and you remember Krishna. How can that be? What, you see this chair. How can? Okay, let's do something now. We're going to have a little game here. I'll give you an object and you relate it to Krishna. Adi Purush. See that chair over there? How does it relate it to Krishna?
Krishna is support of everything. This chair has a little bit of its shakti.
Oh, very good. Krishna is support of everything. So this chair has a little shakti to support us. Very good. Okay, Madhavendra Puri. How about this floor? Can't say the same thing he said.
Yeah. It's all-pervading.
All-pervading, okay, in this house.
I mean, this space at least. So we hold, there's something better for us. Just as if we trip, the floor will catch us. In the same way, if we trip...
Okay, if we trip, the floor will catch us. In the same way, what?
If we trip, if we fall, Krishna will protect us.
Oh, you have a lot of faith. Okay, so this is... So if we fall, Krishna will protect us.
There's a sloka.
Yeah, okay, what's the sloka, Adi Purush?
Oh,
isn't that a nice verse? What does it say?
It says that just as the earth is the shelter for those who trip on it, the same way even for those who offend you, you are the only shelter.
For those who offend you, you are the only shelter. Wonderful. Okay, Prashanta. What about these glasses? How does it relate to Krishna?
Krishna sees everything.
Okay. Very good.
This is the mercy of Krishna, but just adding just a little bit something to our life.
Yes. Prabhupada will say, you cannot see Krishna, you need glasses. So I will make the operation in your eyes so you can see. Jai Nitai. What about the spoon there that's in the Achman cup?
This. With this spoon, Krishna is feeding his pure devotee with nectar.
Krishna is feeding his pure devotee with nectar. Okay. That's very nice. Yes. Okay, I think. Everybody else is hiding. Oh, Janmashtami, yes. Why not? Yes, okay. We have some medicine here. How does it relate to Krishna?
Devotion to extra
term, I know that it comes to memory. Yes, Nivitita Shara Upagyamana. Very good. Very good. Okay, the message is connected to Krishna. Because Krishna's devotee takes it. Okay, and Bhavoshadi, and also the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Lord Chaitanya brings. Okay, so now we should spend our whole day like this. Whatever we see, we should try and relate it to Krishna. We should, and we'll all become Mahabhagavats. Mahabhagavats. So Mahabhagavat naturally sees like that. We see like that sometimes, maybe once in a day or... You can try 1 hour a day or something. Relate everything to Krishna. How is it related? How is everything? How am I related to Krishna? That's what I wonder most of the time. So we can do this. Little things to make us more Krishna conscious. So Lord Chaitanya, the last thing he said to Ramananda Roy was, Radha Krishna tomar maha prema hoy jahataha Radha Krishna tomare swarai. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Roy, you are an advanced devotee and are always filled with ecstatic love for Radha and Krishna. Therefore, whatever you see, anywhere and everywhere, simply awakens your Krishna consciousness." So in Nectar of Devotion, there is, I think, a chapter is about udipan, or things that stimulate ecstatic love for Krishna. So there's very specific things, I think, like the flute of Krishna, his ankle bells, different things. But for a Mahabhagavat, whatever he sees stimulates his ecstatic. He may see a tree, he may see the sky, he may see a person. Anything he sees, he doesn't require something special. It'll stimulate his ecstatic love for Krishna. So that's quite an advanced level of Krishna consciousness. So I have a little story here from Burijan and his comment on this verse on how Krishna is watching you. There was one devotee, Kurma, who wrote the cookbook, I think. And he was telling how he was flying to India on his way here. And they had a stopover in Bangkok. And then he turned on the TV. And then on the TV, it was devotees, and it was Vrindavan. It was a documentary about Vrindavan. And Balaram Dauji came on the screen. And Kurma realized, Big Brother is watching me. There's Dauji watching me, whatever I'm doing. Turn on the TV and what do you get? Dauji watching you. Only a devotee this can happen. So anyway, yes, Krishna is watching whatever you're doing. And I've got something here about seeing Krishna. We all want to see Krishna. There will be, I think, some purports coming up about how the devotee really wants to see Krishna always. So here is one. About, can you see God? So this is by Toshan Krishna, he's my godbrother. One night at a lecture, Srila Prabhupada was lecturing. Someone came dressed in a long robe with moons and stars and long hair carefully arranged. He sat erect during Prabhupada's entire lecture, then almost glaring at Prabhupada, he said, "What about Buddha?" Now Prabhupada glared back and said, "What about Buddha?" And then the person said to Prabhupada, "Can you see God?" Prabhupada said, "No, you're in the way." Prabhupada. Anyway, Prabhupada had a sense of humor. And what does that mean? The guy had such a huge false ego, you know, with the big flashy robes, thinking he was God. But yeah, these people, they get in the way of your seeing Krishna. And that's their idea. They want to be Krishna. So it's very difficult to see Krishna. And sometimes you see these people in Vrindavan. There was one person yesterday dressed in, I think he was dressed in saffron or yellow silk with a sash and a peacock feather, and he had a trail of dogs barking at him, following him down the road. So yes, they think they're God, but they're attracting dogs, actually, what they're attracting. Verse 12. Nayasyatyanta matyam cha svaparanantaram vihi vishasya muniyasma visham cha tad ritam maha. Supreme Personality of God has no beginning, no end, and no middle. Nor does he belong to a particular person or nation. He has no inside or outside. The duality is found within this material world, such as beginning and end, mine and theirs, are all absent from personality of the Supreme Lord. The universe which emanates from him is another feature of the Lord. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate truth, and he is complete in greatness. So who can compare to Krishna? Now in the middle of the purport, there is a sentence which I picked out. He is expanded in everything, but he is not everything. He is achintya, bheda, abheda, simultaneously one and different. So if we could just understand that one point, we'd be self-realized. How Krishna is everywhere, but he is not everything. Achintya, bheda, that's our philosophy. Achintya, bheda, bheda, tattva. Verse 13. Savishvakaya Puruhutaisha Satya Sayam Jyoti Aja Purana Tate Sujamaria Jayat Vishakya Tam Vidyaya Dasya Nidiha Aste. The entire cosmic manifestation is the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who has millions of names and unlimited potencies. He is self-effulgent, unborn and changeless. He is the beginning of everything, but he has no beginning. Because he has created this cosmic manifestation by his external energy, the universe appears to be created, maintained, and annihilated by him. Nonetheless, he remains inactive in his spiritual energy and is untouched by the activities of the material energy. So the application of Achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva, Prabhupada gives us in this purport, if the Lord is everywhere, then what? Of course, we hear the Lord is everywhere, so then what? What can we understand about that? What realization can we come to? Yes?
Whoever we see and whomever we see should not exploit, but rather...
Mm-hmm, good.
Good.
Use everything in Krishna's service. That was what we heard in the previous verses. Everything, therefore, use everything in his service. If Krishna is everywhere, therefore, we should use everything in his service. So there's another thing Prabhupada says in this purport too. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in Shikshastika, Namanam Kari Bhagada Nija Sarva Shaktis. So this is one way that the Lord is everywhere. Supreme Personality of Godhead has many names which are all none different from the Supreme Person. This is spiritual existence. By chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, consisting of names of the Supreme Lord, we find the name has all the potencies of the person. So this is one application also of how Krishna is everywhere. If Krishna is everywhere, then when you chant his name, he's there. His name is all-pervading. Yeah, I had that experience. Even in the void, the name is there. I was in the void, and then the name, I saw the holy name in the void. So that's quite nice, too. Quite reassuring that there is no void in this creation. The holy name extends everywhere in the creation, even in the void. And the void may be in your own mind also. Sometimes your mind is like that. So, at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, even though the people of the world have forgotten God and may say that God is dead, this is not a fact. One can understand God when one takes to the Krishna conscious movement, and thus one can be happy. So God lives. There's a little story again by Burijan, where Prabhupada was at 26 Second Avenue, and he said, all names are names of God. Even whatever name you have, it's a name of God. Even if it's not a Hindu Sanskrit name. So then Satsarup, he asked Satsarup Maharaj what his name was. And he said, my name is Stephen. And Stephen means little. The Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna is smaller than the smallest. So whatever name you have or you had, that is a name of Krishna. Isn't that nice? Only for the pure devotee, of course. Now these names, they will help us to remember Krishna. The names that we got in initiation. So, in one book, Mukundamala Stotra, there is one verse 15. Please hear of the treatment for the disease of birth and death. It is the name of Krishna. Recommended by Yajnavalkya and other expert yogis steeped in wisdom, this boundless eternal inner light is the best medicine, for when drunk, it bestows complete and final liberation. Just drink it. So the holy name, we'll end on the holy name in this class. And we ask any questions or comments on these verses. We're starting the prayers of Swayambhuva Manu. And you have to remember, he's saying all these prayers while he's standing on one leg for 100 years. Yes, Dhamma Krishna.
I found it interesting to hear this verse.
Where?
Again, it's similar than Ishopanishad.
Oh, very similar to Ishopanishad, yes. Oh, interesting. Who told you that?
Banu Maharaj.
Okay, so according to Banu Maharaj, the Isho is spoken by Swayambhuva Manu. So we find similarities here. What did Srila Prabhupada say?
It is the Vedas personified who speak.
Veda's personified, okay? Now, that could be in different kalpas, you know, whenever there are many kalpas in the life of Brahma. And in one kalpa, it could be, in this kalpa, it could be, yes. Yes, yes, it's the Upanishads. Yes. Yeah, there must be, if anyone knows, if anyone is familiar with the Upanishads. Here we recognize, at the end it says that he was reciting verses from the Upanishads. So obviously, well, we have here Ishopanishad, or who knows, there may be so many Upanishads. When we get to also into the fifth chapter of this book, which we will hear next week, the demigods will be reciting prayers to the Lord, and we'll find, and Prabhupada says, these are all Vedic mantras, whatever they're reciting, they're all Vedic mantras. And you can, yes, actually I was hearing last summer in Mayapur, we had a class on that, the relationship of Bhagavatam to the Upanishads and everything, and that's dealt with there. The Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Upanishads, and the six darshans are there, six darshans and the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra. So then Bhagavatam is the essence of all of them. So we'll recognize things from the Upanishads in Bhagavatam also, because it's the essence. It's the essence of Vedanta Sutra, actually. And Vedanta Sutra is coming from the Upanishads. Vedanta Sutra is the essence of the Upanishads, and then Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedanta. It's the commentary on Vedanta. So then that's how it comes, like that, yeah. Acha, Kulu Manali.
Small temple of
Manu. Interesting.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to have darshan of Sraimbhuva Manu, you can go to Kulu Manali. Oh, Manali. Okay, the name Manali comes from Manu. Very good.
Manali.
Manali. Manali. Okay. So anybody who goes to the hills for the summer, you can go and have darshan of Sraimbhuva Manu. Yes, Maharanda Puri. Yeah, Vaivasvata Manu. That's
yes.
Vaivasvata. Well, here it says something else.
It says 40.
40 million. It could be anything. Yeah. Because we have the, we know the time. We know Manu's age.
Can calculate.
It's 28 yuga cycles. So each yuga cycle is a certain amount. And it says 100 million, 120, 120 million. Or 1 million, or I can't remember. 120. Right, 28 yuga cycles times whatever a yuga cycle is. Yeah, sometimes there are mistakes like that. And we have found some even in the Sanskrit. It's not so rare. I mean, it's not so common in the first, up to when the Prabhupada's books, but then afterwards there's more. I noticed anyway. Yeah, one purport it says 40 million years or something. Okay, any other questions or comments on these verses? Okay, we'll stop here.